Welcome to the Bill Cartwright Show with our special guest, three-time world champ, Dickie Simpkins. Dickie, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, Bill. Looking forward to this opportunity to get to talk basketball and talk about everything on the show. Thank you for having me.
You know, I'm always curious about where people started. So can you tell us about where you grew up? And I really want to know about your mom and dad.
So I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my parents moved to, after I was born, probably about 8 months after I was born, they moved right out into PG County, the famed PG County in Maryland, which is 20 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. A lot of Black families were starting to move out towards the suburbs at that time. And we moved out there, and I pretty much grew up my whole life in Fort Washington, Maryland. Again, 20 minutes outside of D.C. And then when I was 5, my dad left us. And then from there on, I grew up with my mom, and we went from there. So I played basketball in the DMV. It's called the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, that metropolitan area. But, you know, played basketball in the famed PG County, went to Friendly High School. And everything kind of grew from there. I just kind of grew up and learned how to navigate through basketball, through stuff off the court, just growing up through the fabric of the Washington, D.C. area. And that is how I kind of grew into who I am today. And then obviously my mother was a big factor of that. She was my mentor. She was my idol. She was my mother and father combined, and she guided me with everything that I needed to do to try to achieve success academically, athletically, and just in life. So that's kind of where it all started.
So let's talk about high school. So your mother was a big factor, obviously, and sports was. Besides your mother, talk about who kind of guided you when you were in high school, and talk about how you became a basketball player.
Well, it's funny because I was in elementary school and I was in the fourth grade, and a kid in my class, his father was coaching the boys in rec. He was coaching a team in the boys in rec or in the park district or whatever it was called. I forgot what it's called, but he told me they had a game. The season had already started. They had a game, and he was like, hey, why don't you come down and play with us? So I showed up. I could walk to the school. It was like a 30-minute walk. I walked to the school because the games were at the elementary school. Showed up. His dad gave me a jersey. I went out there and played, and had a big game, scoring a lot of baskets. And his father asked me to come back and play with them for the rest of the season. And that's where basketball kind of took off from a team sport aspect. But my brother got me started in basketball before that. So I was just playing on the courts and the playground and learning. And he always taught me about being versatile, knowing how to be able to do everything on the court. Fast forward that, I was playing a lot. I ended up having to play with older groups because I was tall. So I was always playing up, but not really playing that. I went from playing a lot as a young fourth grader to not really playing that much. And I was playing on daddy ball. So it was daddy ball back then where the fathers were coaching their sons. You know, I didn't have a father around to kind of navigate that for me. My mother just, you know, she just always told me to go work hard and do my best. She didn't really know how to navigate it. Until this guy came who played at the high school that I ended up going to and coached me in the eighth grade. And when he coached me in the eighth grade, that's when my game kind of went to another level where he put a lot of focus in helping build my confidence, helping teach me how to be effective on the court. And then he took me to my high school coach that summer after my eighth grade. The guy's name was Jerome County. He took me to my high school coach, who was named Roy Henderson. And the high school coach said, we're going to put you on the summer league team. So I was playing summer league basketball before I even started high school. And then it kind of went from there. And I was fortunate because my high school coach had coached a guy named John Smith who went to Duke. So my coach, Coach Thurl Bailey, who obviously played in the NBA. So my coach had some experience on developing and having a plan for players who had talent and had a chance. And so it kind of went from there. And then I got caught into AAU. I didn't know anything about AAU, and a guy by the name of Tony Watkins came, got me to play on his AAU team, and then it went to another level playing all around the country in front of college coaches. So that was kind of my journey.
Wow. So talk about now you're ready to leave high school and you're on your way to college. So what are you thinking? Did you know where you wanted to go? And what were some of the other options?
Well, it's funny because ninth grade year, I was 6'4". And I was playing JV, and then the coach put me on varsity. I didn't want to go on varsity, but he said he had a plan. And I played AAU that summer after ninth grade. I come back in the 10th grade, and I was about to go to a different school, a private school. And then my mother wanted me to go to this private school because she worked in education. I was all enrolled. And then when I thought about it, I was like, I wanted to go to the public school. I had felt a comfort level there. My mother wasn't for that. And then I just told my mother that I wasn't going to go to high school if she made me go to the private school. So that was my tactic. And she gave in and told me if I don't get my grades at that private school, at the public school, I wouldn't be playing basketball. So she allowed me to go back to the public school. My coach was happy. And then I came back sophomore year at 6'8". So I went from 6'4 to 6'8". Started on varsity as a sophomore. And everything accelerated real fast from that point. So my exposure, my name, being known, college coaches went from 0 to 100 real quick. And I became one of the top high school players in the country. Went to Nike camp. Back then it was Nike's top 100 players. Played against a lot of guys, and then it was time to get ready to go to college. And my mother wanted me to go to Notre Dame. I remember she wanted me to go to Notre Dame. It's like Notre Dame was one of the places I visited. It was actually the first place I visited. And I went to make my visit. Digger Phelps was the coach there. And then when I came back then you had to kind of figure it out on your own as a kid. Your parents weren't with you. And you kind of had to figure it out on your own. And I came back and told my mom, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be going to Notre Dame. It doesn't seem like a good fit for me. So she was disappointed. So it basically came down to I wanted to go to a school where basketball was king. It didn't have to compete with a football team. I wanted to go to a school that wasn't too big. And I wanted to go away from home. I wanted to be away from home, but not extremely too far where my mother couldn't come see me play. And I wanted to always play in the Big East or the ACC because I grew up watching that being in the D.C. area. And so it came down to Providence. Came down to Providence and UConn. And Providence seemed that it had more of a family atmosphere for me, and that's why I chose Providence.
So who was the coach there, and who was some of the players?
So Rick Barnes was the head coach at Providence. He had just kind of – he was probably in his second – when I got there, I believe it was his third year being a head coach. So, and he was one of the youngest, if not the youngest coach in college basketball at the time. My freshman year, I played with Eric Murdoch. And at that time, Eric Murdoch was a big name in college basketball. They used to call him EMT because he was the leading scorer for us, but he was approaching the all-time NCAA steals record. And I believe he's still in the top five or top three. But he was the big-time name on our Providence team. He ended up getting drafted that year, I believe, 17th pick in the draft. But I played with Eric Murdoch my first year, and then we came in as freshmen as, like, the top four-rated recruiting class in college basketball at the time. And I played with Michael Smith, who played in the NBA, got drafted, played with the Sacramento Kings. I played with, as we went on my junior year, Eric Williams joined our college team. I played with him. He got drafted in the first round to the Boston Celtics, I think. And when I was a senior, Austin Crozier came in as a freshman and took him under my wing, showed him the ropes. And Austin was with us that his freshman year, our senior year, we won the Big East. And Austin ended up getting drafted in the first round and played for the Indiana Pacers. So I played with those. Those are some of the guys that I played with in college, and NBA guys. But we had a talented crew. But Coach Barnes was a coach. Now Coach Barnes coaches at – he's had a long career coaching at Clemson, Texas, and now Tennessee. And he has a, you know, obviously an unbelievable list of NBA players that he's coached.
Yeah. No, I know. He's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So now it's your senior year. And what were you thinking? Did you feel like there was great possibilities of being drafted really high? What were you thinking?
Well, the NBA didn't really kick in until sophomore year. When I came back from my sophomore year of college, that summer before sophomore year, I had played in an event, got invited to an event called the Olympic Festival. So it would be equivalent to what they have now with the USA under 20 or whatever. It would be the same equivalence to that. It was basically breeding talent for Olympic competition. I had a good tournament and NBA scouts were there. When I came back, that was when I said to myself, the NBA could be a possibility. And then after my sophomore year, I went and worked. The Boston Celtics used to have a basketball camp for kids up in Brandeis, and they would bring in some college players to work the camp as counselors, and then the college players could play against the NBA guys at night. And when I got invited to that, I kind of felt a little bit more that I could play in the NBA one day. It started to become more of a reality, a possibility in my mind. And then my senior year in college, we had a very good season. We went in the Big East. We played the NCAA tournament. And then it was kind of like, yeah, I could be in the NBA, but I wasn't sure. And then when I went to participate, when I got invited to participate in those pre-draft events, I went and played well. And that is when I saw my stock rise real quick. And then it started to become a reality that I could be an NBA player because teams were bringing me in for workouts. And then I was hearing what range I could be in the draft. And then as the different events went on, I started finding out it wasn't necessary for me to play in any more events because I had established this in myself and my stock had risen. And then on draft day, you know, I felt like I would be drafted. I was told I'd be drafted in the first round, and then I watched the draft with my mother and my agent. My mother was in Louisville for an event she was doing, so I flew to Louisville, and my agent was there. We got a hotel room and kind of set up a draft war room, and we watched the draft, and it became reality. But my senior year, throughout that season, throughout those pre-draft camps, it started becoming closer to this may happen.
Okay, so you get drafted. And tell me about that. What were you thinking about?
First thing I thought about when I heard the Chicago Bulls, it's funny because the day of the draft, I was calling every general manager that brought me in for a workout. I think I did 11 workouts for 11 teams.
Wow.
And I was calling every general manager just to thank them for having me in. This was before the draft. It was draft day, but it was that morning, early afternoon. And it's funny, when I called the Chicago Bulls and Jerry Krause came on the phone, and he was like, hey, nobody called you. Nobody called you. Why are you calling? Nobody called you. And I was just like, Mr. Krause, I just called to say thank you for bringing me in for a workout and interviewing me. I just wanted to show call and give you my appreciation for that. And he was like, oh, okay. So when I got off the phone, I'm like saying to myself, well, I know the Bulls probably not going to draft me. And so when I hear the Chicago Bulls select Dickie Simpkins for the 21st pick in the first round, all I did was I just stood straight up out the chair and put my hands in the air. And I was just amazed. And the first thing I was thinking was all of the sacrifice and all of the work had paid off. When you don't know if things are going to really happen or and there's no guarantee, that was the first thing that went through my mind. I was amazed at hearing my name, and my thoughts were everything that I sacrificed, the work, the pain, the good and the bad, all paid off. And then I gave my mother a big hug. And so that was my reaction on draft night, hearing my name.
Okay, now you are in Chicago. Talk about your first, talk about training camp. What was that like for you?
Well, I came to Chicago to get ready for summer league, and we went out to Utah. So that was, that was interesting going out to Utah. At that time, summer league was like, we were there for like 2 weeks, 14 days. So that was kind of a long trip. But I come back for training camp, and now I'm around the team and the veterans and everybody that had been there. Scotty and Tony and all those guys, and Ron Harper had just signed with the Bulls. So, being in training camp, being in the practice facility, being with a team that had just won 3 championships, man, it was amazing to see how they operated as an organization, which, I saw why they were champions. And MJ had just retired that year I got drafted. That summer, he had made his decision he wasn't playing, so I was like, okay, I won't be playing with MJ. And training camp was actually tough, because back then it was 2-a-days. At the first several days, we had 2 practices a day, so it was actually pretty tough from that standpoint. But just from a standpoint from a basketball, I think one of the things why the Bulls selected me was that I could pick up the triangle offense. I didn't have a problem picking up the triangle offense and understanding my role. But it was different. It was different going from playing in college basketball, being the leader, the captain of the team, to going to where you're the youngest player on a professional team with grown men who have won. And it's like starting over from scratch to find your way. But the players welcomed me in well and helped guide me and be mentors to me. So that was a great feel. And then I met guys like you. I met guys like you when I first got to the Bulls. So it was a good surrounding of veteran players and guys like yourself who my first year I played against you because you were in Seattle, but then you came to work with the Bulls. So I got to play against you that last year, but getting to know you, that was a big help, and just all the veterans around helped. So it was different. It was strange, and I had to really find my way because I was the youngest guy on the team.
Talk about your first championship season, and what was that like for you?
Well, before we even got to the championship season, that rookie season was when MJ started coming back and practicing with us, and we had to keep it under wraps. And then I kind of got a feel for why the Bulls won like they won, actually being on the court with MJ in practices and seeing. And then when he fully announced that he was going to play and he came back to play, I saw why the Bulls were a championship team. And then when we lost to Orlando, I saw the drive, how driven MJ was for that to never happen again. So that first championship was that 72-10 season. And it was just amazing, man, because we were beating teams by 20 points, 20 plus. We were destroying teams. And then Dennis, D-Rod, had got hurt. And Phil said I was starting. So I started like November and December And that was just amazing feel on that championship run, to be a part of that, to be on the court with the greatest player that ever played a game, with guys that were, you know, the best of the best to ever play this game. It felt amazing. And then to win that NBA championship, I mean, it was like a circus. It was like a rock band on a tour, just to experience night in and night out, and to win that championship and all the love the city showed, Chicago, and everything that came with winning was just, it was just amazing, man. It was something that I couldn't even dreamed of for my, you know, to be so early in my career.
I was fortunate enough to be part of the first three championships. Talk about the difference of those three championships. What were some of the challenges that were different every year? Or was there?
Well, I think the first challenge was the first year, if there was a challenge, it was more so MJ has set a tone that we came up short, and nothing is gonna let us come up short again. So everybody better understand that. And then when it became the 72-10 situation became a reality, that wasn't even, I don't believe we started off the season thinking or looking at the 72-10 thing. It started to become a reality as the season went on. The goal was always the championship. But then when the 72-10 picture became a part of it, again, MJ just set the tone, and it was just the tone, it was like the tone was set, like, let's not play around, let's not waste time, let's take care of business. And I think if it was any pressure, it was the intensity of MJ being back now. And after we came up short in that half a season when he came back, now he has a full season, he had a full off season. It was the intensity of now proving that we could win a championship again. I don't know if it was super pressure, but I mean, it was definitely intense towards that. And then the second championship seemed like we were back in the saddle. Like, it was like, this is expected now. This is back to being expected. Nothing short of a championship. And then that last championship was the continued, you know, how long can this team be together? And it became this is the last hurrah. So it was like, can everybody keep the focus, since this has been known as the last time that this team will be together? That was the challenge of the last one.
So you played three championship seasons, and then now you're leaving Chicago and you end up in Golden State.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Yeah, so actually that was in my, 1997, after the second championship, I was, you know, my role was kind of sporadic, up and down. I got the experience winning two championships. I thought my role would expand. But, you know, at that time, Phil was more about veterans and things of that nature for helping to get to the finals. And so I felt like I needed to find out if there was an opportunity out there to have a bigger role for my career. And so I got traded to Golden State in that third championship season in the beginning of 97 for Scott Burrell. And when they say the grass isn't green on the other side, it definitely is true. So I get there thinking this is a fresh new start as far as building and growing my career as a player after experiencing all the great things of winning championships. But it was totally two different mentalities of the organization and environment from Golden State and the Chicago Bulls. And so I was there the year Sprewell choked Carlissimo, so that'll give you an idea of how the dysfunction was with the Golden State Warriors. It wasn't the Golden State Warriors of today. It was a whole different level of a lot of dysfunction going on there. And experiencing and seeing Sprewell choke the coach was, and I was like, man, this is like night and day. And so I ended up getting, so they ended up making some trades. I ended up being a casualty of the trades, and they ended up waiving me. And as soon as they waived me, my agent called me a couple of days later and told me that Jerry Krause had called him and said Phil and MJ wanted me back with the Bulls. And so that was great to feel. That was great to know that. That was great to feel like what I did when I was there, knowing my role and how I was professional and blending in, counted, and they wanted me back. And so then I ended up being back with the Bulls during that third championship. And it just went back to feeling familiar, and obviously we win. So that was my experience at Golden State. And then after we win that championship and the team is no more, we go into that season, that rough season, that 50-game season where it wasn't the Bulls or the Bulls anymore. Tim Floyd became the coach and had to take on the responsibility of trying to rebuild. But I got an opportunity to play even more. So that helped my growth in my career in basketball and showing that I could play. But that was different. But the fans were still locked in, even though we weren't winning. So that was kind of, Going from winning three championships to not winning anymore was definitely a change, a shock.
So talk about your next step. So you're not with the Bulls anymore, and you end up, I think you went overseas.
Played after the championships, I played two more years with the Bulls, and then I go to play in Europe. My first stop was Greece. So I played 6 years in Europe. Played in Greece twice, played in Lithuania, played in Russia, played in Spain, played in Germany. Some of my other international basketball, professional basketball was in Puerto Rico and in the Philippines. But I ended up going international, which was it was definitely a big adjustment. It was a big adjustment, but I had had some European experience playing professionally because when I was in college, my senior year, Coach Barnes took us over to play against some professional teams. But it was a big adjustment because now I'm living in Greece. I'd never been to Greece. I bring my family over. My kids were younger. Now I'm playing basketball with a language barrier. I'm playing in a different culture, different country. But I'm a guy that adapts pretty quick. And when it's business and, got to stay professional, I adapted fast. It was a challenge. It wasn't always easy, but I adapted. And I had some good teammates. And I had some good American teammates that were playing on my team. But if I could do it all over, I wouldn't give up that experience. My 6 years playing international basketball was an unbelievable experience for myself and my family and my kids. My kids went to school over there in different countries. I got to see different cultures. I got to learn different history. I get to, just the experience was unbelievable for my life of basketball, but also off the court. And I got to see all of Eastern and Western Europe. And so it was a great experience. It was a great experience.
Talk about your favorite place.
I don't have one specific favorite place. I got a couple because of different reasons. So Lithuania was a good place for the whole family. It was kind of real relaxed, not so much a high active city. And my kids could go to international school there. A lot of people spoke English. Food was good. And they had a lot of stuff that's in America. For the most part, they had enough stuff that resembled America. But that was the best place for the family. I think Spain was good from a basketball standpoint. And when I was in the Philippines, that was a good spot from a basketball standpoint too, because the coach I played for in the Philippines, he was an American guy, and he was running the triangle offense. And so it was easy transition, and my teammates were great. Manila was an unbelievable city. I was like pleasantly surprised that on what Manila was. It wasn't what I thought it was to be or what they showed it to be on TV. I mean, Manila was like being in LA. And so that was a good place. So I would say Lithuania, Spain, and Manila were some good places, were some of my favorite places playing in international.
You know, my last year of basketball was in Seattle, and I kind of knew that I was probably very close to getting injured, so I decided to quit. So how did you know this was your last year?
So my last go-around was in 2006. I was in Germany playing on a EuroLeague team in Germany. And my last 3 years of playing in Europe, I started to go over to Europe halfway in the season. So I would stay home so I could be around the kids more because they were in school. And then I would go halfway when a team needed a veteran player, they needed a player, then I would go over and play the second half of the season. So 2006, I'm playing in Germany. And when I would go over half of the season, the family would stay in Chicago. And so I felt like I could still play three more years after 2006. I felt like I could get three more quality years of production in, but I wasn't producing at the level. I didn't feel like I was going to be able to produce 20 plus points every time we played at that point in my career. I could probably do that here and there. But in Europe, in international basketball, that just wasn't enough as an American player. And so when I was in Germany, I gave everything I had, the plan, wasn't really feeling the coach. The international coaching philosophy a lot of times were, you know, it's kind of like beating a dead horse. It's like all this practice 100 times a day. And I'm a veteran player. The one thing about the Lithuanian coach, he understood I was a veteran player, so I didn't have to practice in the morning. He would just tell me to go do my physical therapy and my lifting weights. He wanted me more for maybe one practice a day and show up for the games. When I got to Germany, that coach was total opposite, and he kind of warned me. And then the final straw where I said, I could probably play three more years, but this may be it for me, was when I just started feeling like, I need my family with me, and my family's not with me. And I don't know how much I can keep doing this and be over here for 6 months without my family, or maybe only seeing my family once or twice. And that was kind of the big reason why I figured it was time to shut it down. It wasn't about, I felt like I could play solid production for three more years. It was more being around my family as the kids were growing up and being around my wife. And that's what made me make my final decision to make 2006 June my final season of basketball.
So now you're officially not going to play. I kind of knew what I wanted to do. Did you have a sense of what you wanted to do after basketball?
I had kind of a sense. But when I came home, I sat down in the living room with my wife and I wrote on a paper everything that I wanted to do and everything that I felt like I could do and everything that I felt like I had relationship equity in. And when I wrote on that list, everything I wrote on that list, I ended up doing it after I played basketball up until this point. And I wrote on that list coaching, I wrote on that list front office, I wrote on that list TV analyst, I wrote on that list real estate, I wrote on that list, entrepreneur, maybe owning some type of something. So I wrote all those things on the list and I tapped into everything. So I started my basketball program, Next Level Performance, NLP, in 2006. That was my coaching and skill development piece that I had on the paper. I coached in some D-League event, which is now called the G-League, but I coached in the D-League event. I coached in Portsmouth, which is a pre-draft event with some potential NBA guys. But my program gave me the coaching aspect, and it gave me the owning my own business entrepreneur aspect, because it was team related and it was a training business also. Then I went and got my real estate license. And then I went and got my real estate broker's license, and I started doing a little real estate. Then I went and got my bartender license, because you get your bartender license, you also get the part where you learn the legal part of it so you can one day apply for a liquor license in case you want to own a restaurant or a bar. And then MJ called me one day. Well, before that, I started work. Doris Burke, my relationship equity with Doris Burke, she pointed me in the direction and connected me with ESPN. And I started becoming a TV analyst for ESPN, which I did for 5 years. And then I've been with Fox since then. I've been with Fox for like 9 years. And then MJ called me one day. We had some talks about maybe me working for him. And he called me one day and he said he wanted me to come down and work with the Bobcats at the time, now Hornets. And I flew down there and met with them, and then I started working as a scout. So I wrote a list and I tackled everything on that list. And so that's where I'm at now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I really love the fact that you had a list. I did as well. So I kind of knew. So I kind of knew what I wanted to do, to be an entrepreneur. And then, of course, I got a call from Jerry Krause, and I ended up coaching for 16 years. So I did have a list. So even though it didn't work out,
yeah, the list was big for me.
So talk about your family. We've alluded to it.
Yeah, so when I got drafted in 94, I came to Chicago in July. I met my wife in September. She was celebrating her friend's birthday at a restaurant, and we met. And we hung out a little bit. You know, things started to develop and grow as time went on. And so we got married in 2000. So I've been married for September to be 22 years. And we've been together for 28 years. And we have 4 kids, girl, boy, girl, boy. So we have an older pair and a younger pair. My daughter is 24 years old. And she graduated from Harvard in 2020. My son is 22 years old, and he just graduated from UPenn in May, and he just got accepted in Wharton Business School. And then my oldest daughter she studied environmental engineer, so she works for a consulting firm as a environmental engineers. So they have graduated. So I got 2 down, 2 to go. My younger daughter is 15, and she's going to start the 10th grade. And my younger son is 13, just turned 13 on Tuesday, and he's going to my younger daughter plays volleyball. And so I got no complaints, man. Things have been working out. Kids have been doing what they're supposed to do. Got a lovely wife that, you know, we've grown. Stood and had a path for how we wanted to grow and move the family, and that's what we've done.
Awesome. Well, Dickie, thank you so much for being on.
Appreciate it.
Wow, you've really had a great journey.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing journey, man. And playing the championships always, you know, nobody can ever take that from me. So that's been you know, that's been a part of my story that speaks volumes and people recognize. And then, you know, the things that I'm doing now in NBA with scouting and doing TV analyst work and public speaking to corporations and my basketball program has kept me very busy and has kept me involved in basketball from all different aspects. So it's been fun. It's been good. I've been blessed.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And let's stay in touch.
All right. I enjoyed it, man. Thanks for having me on.